Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on StashMyComics.com podcast, episode number 27. We are powered by Geek Energy. I am your host, Tim Morse. With me, as always, is Kelly. Kelly, how are you today?
I was bad, but now I am awesome.
Why don't you give everybody insight into what you were doing right before we started recording?
Well, this morning I had to rush out of the house to go get a brand new charger because it broke at 1:30 last night. And so that made me really anxious, but now I'm really happy because there's all this awesome Teen Wolf news coming out from New York Comic Con.
You downplay it so much, though. Like, to give our listening base an idea, while we're going over the show planner, talking about random stuff, waiting for Tom to get on.
Hey.
We
when me, sure.
Waiting for Tom.
You hear the snickers, sobs, and rant noise coming. And what are you doing? You're reading script pages that are being released and the live tweets from the panel that's taking place. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm just trying not to, like, yell. Oh, that's why all the noises sound really weird.
And only a nerd for playing Magic the
Gathering. Well, do you want?
Oh, yeah. This is a lifestyle choice. This is different.
Fair enough.
I'm sure Magic is a lifestyle choice, too, let's be honest.
Is the secondary market Magic is as vicious as the comic book secondary market?
That's great, man. I really shouldn't judge. I do musical theater and run our comic book. What do you want?
See, there you go. With me, as always, also is the editor of StashMyComics.com, Jason. How are you today?
About the same as usual.
Same as usual.
Normal. And I don't know if you've ever read Dreamcatcher, but SSDD.
Do what? I missed that.
If you've never read Dreamcatcher, SSDD. Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. I've never read the book. I've seen the movie, though. I have not had a chance. The book's too thick for me. But anyway...
Log.
Figuratively, next to Jason is the man behind Geek Cinema, Tom. Tom, how are you?
I'm good. And clearly, I'm not literally in the show. I'm on like my fourth computer podcasting the show.
Right, there you go. So, yeah. You went to New York Comic Con yesterday.
I did. All right, relax. Yeah, I did go to the con, but I have to say, I went in my capacity as a college professor, so I didn't go for recreational purposes, although it was very, very cool.
So, what happened while you were there? Anything good? Did you see anybody cool? Anybody interesting?
I haven't been to a full-size Godzilla convention in a very long time, I gotta be honest, and it was almost for the first hour, so it was completely overwhelming how massive the New York Con has grown, because I've been there 10 years ago, or 8 years ago, I guess, the last time I went, and it was tiny in comparison to what this was, but it was just wall-to-wall, literally, people, costumes, you know, Artist Alley was big and crowded and great. My students had a great time in their cosplay. It was cool. But I guess I didn't really have any celebrity slides. I managed to avoid actually seeing anyone famous, except for, you know, comic writers and artists and whatnot.
See, when I went to Chicago, that was overwhelming for me. That was the biggest anything I had ever done. I mean, aside from or anything like that. But I can imagine that New York was twice that, at least. I mean,
yeah, no, it's big. And you know, they say it pales in comparison to San Diego, which I've never been to, so I can only imagine the chaos that is the San Diego Con. But I only ever called hours, like I was saying. There weren't any really, you know, dynamite panels going on. Like, I didn't get into the I miss getting into the Kevin Smith panel because I was still sort of gathering the groups and making sure all my students were not dead at that point. So
no Teen Wolf panel for you.
Yeah, that would have been on my agenda anyway. Just want to make that one clear. But no Teen Wolf panel for me, I'm afraid.
And on for me, go back and go today, because it's today.
Yeah, just
oh, okay, yeah.
Leave.
I'll go back in time, no problem.
Tell me everything they say.
You got it. No problem, Kevin.
You can podcast live on your phone.
We'll yeah, I'll do that. At least fifth device I podcast. No.
So, I am under the impression that, Kelly, you and I are the only ones that watched the debut of Arrow, the Green Arrow TV show that's on the CW right now. What were your thoughts on that, Kelly? What'd you think about it?
I didn't really like it, but I mean, sometimes shows, like the pilot is really bad and then the rest of the show was really good. So I'm holding out to watch like the next few episodes and hopefully it'll be better.
See, with me it was totally different. Like, I'm sitting there with my 13-year-old daughter, who the only thing she knows about Green Arrow, and it kind of surprised me that she even knew this. Before it started, I was like, Danielle, do you know anything about Green Arrow? She goes, didn't he date the Black Canary? I was like, whoa, that's cool that you actually know that. But we're sitting there.
But one thing she knew was that?
That's the only thing she knew.
Okay.
At least she knew that, though. But
that's how she reading there.
When we saw the Deathstroke mask right in the beginning of the episode, I looked at her. I was like, oh, my God, that was Deathstroke's mask. That means he's going to be in the series. She looked at me like I was the craziest person on Earth. She was like, really? Come on. It's not that big a deal. I was like, well, yeah, it kind of is. But I liked it. I thought it was a great show. I thought that the whole idea behind it, him being that I don't care type of playboy that just didn't give a care about anybody except for himself, and then his transition from that being stranded on this island for 5 years, and then what he became when he got home, that was great. And I think that the actor that's playing Oliver Queen did a really good job of going from one aspect to the other, and I enjoyed the fact that they're doing it all in flashbacks. So that'll give us a lot of backstory as the series goes on. Plus, we get to see him change and escalate into the persona that is Arrow, and we get to see Deathstroke.
You know, it's kind of doing a flashback. Kind of like a cross between Batman Begins and Lost.
Yeah, funny you say that. In the show, they talk about Lost while he was stranded on the desert island. When he comes back, he's having dinner with his family, and his buddy is there, and Oliver Queen's like, so what did I miss? And he says, did you catch any of Lost before you left? And he was about to say something, and he's like, don't worry about it. They were all dead anyways.
His buddy got totally wrong. My sister... My sister's not a comic book at all, but she's a giant Sweden geek. She actually, I didn't expect this, but she texted me after the show, after Arrow, said, I don't know if you watched Arrow, but it really showed. It was great. So, I mean, I plan to go back and catch it and stream it or whatnot, just to check it out, but I'm just too busy to get a chance to sit down and watch it.
Well, with that, if anybody has a Kindle or even a really cool smartphone or an uncool smartphone, CW has an app. For the Android. I'm sure they have it for the iPhone too. But the episode of Arrow is on that app right now, so go download that. It's a free app. I downloaded it days before Arrow came on, and I checked it the day after, and it was right there. So by the time this podcast comes out, we'll be 3 episodes in, so you'll be able to catch up on there.
Well, for the series finale, by the time the podcast comes out.
Do what?
Well, the series finale, but it's not a podcast.
Well, there you go.
We'll be done. The whole show will be done. All right.
There you go. Well, gentlemen, we're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we're going to hit up news items, specifically talking about Deathstroke in Arrow's episode number 5. J. Michael Straczynski is going to write the Shadow Man film, and Scott Snyder and Jim Lee are going to do the new Superman title. We'll talk about that in just a minute.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the news right now. So, I'm excited about this, but I don't think anybody else is excited about this. J. Michael Straczynski, you may know him from writing such awesomeness as The Amazing Spider-Man before One More Day or End of Days or whatever stupid thing it was that they ruined him on. Yeah, right? There you go. He's going to write the new Shadow Man film, but that's not what we're going to talk about today. What we're going to talk about today is Deathstroke the Terminator is going to be on Episode 5 of Arrow. Kelly, let's talk about that real quick. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's cool. I mean, like, I'd be really excited to see Deathstroke. I just hope they do it well, because I wasn't impressed with the pilot.
Well, see, with the confirmation of Deathstroke, they've already confirmed that Deadshot is going to be in the show. They've already shown pictures of him and everything. Merlin, one of Green Arrow's biggest villains, is going to be in the show, is already in the show. And now with Deathstroke, that just brings even more characters from the DC universe. And it leads me to believe that with Deathstroke, maybe we could see some of the other Titans come into the show. Tom, what are your thoughts?
Well, look, I'm just one picture. It looked like a costume, right, at least. That looks pretty sweet. I am willing, look, I haven't seen the show yet. I plan to watch the pilot, but you can never, ever judge a show by its pilot. That's one of the problems with modern TV, where everything gets judged so quickly, where a show really needs like a season to find itself. So, I mean, it's like if a show is not a complete disaster right off the bat, every show needs at least a year to find itself. The picture looks great. It looks like they got the look of Deathstroke right anyway. So, yeah, I'd be excited to see it. Absolutely. The best parts, the only small episodes I ever watched were the ones they brought in other characters from the DC Universe, because the rest of the show I could have given two craps.
Right on. In the beginning of Smallville, it was that one villain, one episode thing. For the first three seasons, at least, it was that kind of deal where Clark Kent would go and take care of some dastardly villain and save the small town Smallville. And then later on, as it went on, you saw the likes of Aquaman and Cyborg and Flash and Green Arrow and all that. And then they eventually formed Justice League, which was cool. This feels to me like a grown-up version of Smallville, but it's not Smallville. Like, Smallville's its own thing, and Arrow, I think, is kind of geared, and it really fits, at least for me, toward my demographic, the older people that are watching the show. But Jason, what are your thoughts on Deathstroke being in the Arrow TV series?
Initially, I was like, oh, that's cool, because Deathstroke's one of the characters, you know, he's, I don't want to say underutilized, but he's got a neat power set, I guess. And then I saw the picture, and I was like, oh, his head looks wonky. The mask.
Yeah, I thought the mask looked weird.
But if you noticed, Kelly, at least with you, in the beginning of the pilot episode, on the black side of the mask that was hanging, which was Deathstroke's mask, there was an arrow through it. So that gives an explanation, at least in the television show, of how he lost that eye.
Maybe. I mean,
in the picture...
It would be the first time I've seen Green Arrow stick an arrow in Deathstroke's eye socket.
How many people... Well, okay, you didn't watch it. Man. But he killed...
No, I didn't... I'm saying I've seen in the comics Green Arrow stuck an arrow down in a... Deathstroke's eye socket before.
There we go.
It could just be, you know. I mean, I'm sure they're probably alluding to the fact that he took his eye, but yeah.
Well, we can just wait and see what happens. I mean, I'm excited about this. I think it's great. Deathstroke has never been utilized in a live-action setting before. I mean, we've seen him in the cartoons extensively. I mean, he was a major part of of the storylines there, as he is with the Titans and all that, but with Green Arrow, I mean, they have a history too. But just the fact of seeing that there, when I saw that in the pilot episode, and now to know for a fact that it is going to be there, that has me pumped. I'm going to watch the show and be late picking my wife up from work every Wednesday now.
You know, I when you talk about everybody that was going to be in the, you know, Deadshot, Merlin, Green Arrow doesn't really have any villains.
No, but this gives them a chance to utilize some of the other characters in the DC universe. This, I personally think that this show is going to be a great starting point for other programs. I mean, like, if Arrow succeeds, which I have no doubt that it will, then maybe we could see some of the other lesser characters that don't have as much spotlight as, like, Wonder Woman or Batman or Superman get television shows and actually do very good.
Well, it was just that all three of the villains were not Green Arrow villains,
right,
to start out with. I'm actively trying to think of a Green Arrow villain.
Yeah, I can't pick one out
either. Poverty? I guess. Social issues?
I'm on a
Green Arrow villain?
I'm on a Pia.
Yeah, okay. There you go. I'm on a Pia. That's right.
So
they better have Roy, and then they can have the war on drugs.
There you go. But we still have yet to see Black Canary. I mean, they have to bring that whole aspect.
Yes, you have. What are you talking about? She was right there.
I was paying attention to other things probably then, so.
They said right at the end, they said Dina Laurel Lance is her.
See, I missed the last 10 minutes because I had to go pick up my wife from work.
Yeah, it was at the end where they revealed that it was that Laurel was Black Canary.
Hmm.
Wait a second. Didn't you just tell us we watched it on an app?
No. I downloaded the app so that way if I missed it on television, I could watch it on the app.
Okay, well, there's the last 10 minutes right there.
Well, there you go. Now I don't have to watch it. But I'm going to watch it again anyways.
There you go.
Moving on.
Please.
Scott Snyder, the man behind Batman. Fantastic writer for DC Comics. Him and Jim Lee, we all know who Jim Lee is, are going to take on a new Superman series, most likely going to be titled The Man of Steel. That's the big consensus that's going around right now. But them two together on Superman. My personal thoughts on this are as follows. I don't think that Superman is doing near as good as a lot of the other titles are. And with Snyder taking on Superman and Jim Lee doing the artwork, even if he only sticks through the first storyline, this is going to be explosive. This is going to be a great series. I think that Snyder can take the Man of Steel in a direction that he's never been taken before and really bring it, not make it grounded, but make it solid. You know, instead of just having this invulnerable man flying around, doing whatever he's got to do and smooching on Wonder Woman from time to time. But, Jason, let's go with you first. What are your thoughts about the Snyder-Jim Lee team-up?
If anybody can do it, I guess it would be Scott Snyder. Just because he's done, apparently, great things with Batman. I inherently find him a boring character, so it would take a lot to make him unboring, I guess, to me.
See, with my train of thought is that the work that Snyder has done on Batman is I think some of the best since Hush, and Lee was a big part of Hush, and now with him doing his artwork on Superman and Snyder just getting done with the Court of Owls stuff and now going into Death of the Family in Batman, him taking over Superman, well, not taking over, but having a title to explore how he wants to explore that, it's going to be fantastic. But Kelly, let me get your thoughts on that.
I think that they're a really good team, definitely, but like Jason said, like, I never really have been into Superman, so it just depends on, like, the direction they go, the story will determine whether I want to read it or not.
Right on. Would it be something that you'd check out, though?
Yeah, I might check it out. Yeah, it really just depends. It's like, because with Superman, just because I really don't care about the character as much, I have to see if I like the story.
Fair enough. Tom, what are your thoughts on this?
You know who I bet doesn't like this is Rob Liefeld.
There you go, because he's a loser and he's not with DC anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the problem is that with Kelly said she doesn't care about Superman, and Jane said Superman's an inherently boring character, and he shouldn't be, and he hasn't been for years, and I touched upon this, and I will touch upon this briefly. You know, coming off of my top 10 list article, I'm going to write an article about why I didn't put Superman on my top 10 superhero movies list of all time. He's been so mishandled,
yeah,
so horribly for years and years, where he could be just such a fascinating, he's the most powerful hero in the world. He has such responsibility on his shoulders, not only to protect the Earth, but to sort of present the front of what heroes have to be. He's the public face of superheroes to the DC universe. You know, I mean, there's just so much pressure on Superman. I can't imagine why people have such trouble writing him. And I know I'm speaking, you know, egotistically as my unpublished writer self. It's like, I can take that character and just fly rings with him. So I'm going to, like I always do when another big-name writer gets put in Superman, I'm going to say, I'm going to assume this guy can do it because I can't see how you could fail. Everyone fails at Superman, and I don't understand.
Now, see, the best Superman story that I have read thus far is Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman. And
it might have been.
I think that with what you're saying, that Superman is such a deep character, and he has all this responsibility on his shoulders, and he being the face of heroes. You know, the one thing that I've never seen, I mean, they allude to it, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody do it this way, is they've never written a Superman story where he perceives himself as an alien on an alien world. I mean, he looks human, he acts human, he does human things, but he's not human. You know, he's Kryptonian. He comes from a totally different planet. And I think they kind of gloss over that, but they never.
Well, that's
really
because
go
that's
in.
Because of how he was raised. He wasn't raised to be an alien. He was raised as a person.
Right, but as he's grown and as he's become a man, you know, in on Earth, he realizes who he is and what he is and what he's capable of, and he's embraced more so his Kryptonian side than his human side. You know, Clark Kent's just a facade. You know, he is
Cal. No, I disagree with that.
You don't think so?
Superman is the bad. Clark Kent is the man. Whereas Batman is the man. Bruce Wayne is the mask.
Yeah, I agree with Jason.
See, but that would make a good Superman story then, because I've always...
No, but that's the appeal of Superman, is that he's a supremely powerful character,
right,
but yet he's so grounded to his roots, to his upbringing.
I agree with you. He's such a small-town character with such immense power. He is Clark Kent.
Fair enough.
You know,
that can't.
He is Clark Kent. But, and Batman is Batman. He's not Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne doesn't exist anymore.
Bruce Wayne is just the facade. He has to be Bruce Wayne on purpose, not because he wants to be. But with Superman, you know, he's Clark Kent, but he's also Kal-El. He has to embrace that side. Clark Kent can be Clark Kent, but that's not who he is. The personality and things.
Yes, it is who he is.
But
that's the whole point.
That's saying an adopted kid's name is not the real name. I mean, you know, he's adopted, but he's still Kent, and he was named Clark by his parents. It's a big deal to him. That's why I think that when you have these stories that explore, you know, the dead planet and his Kryptonian legacy and all that, those are boring. The dead planet, who cares?
When I read All-Star Superman, the whole thing that I saw with that was not the Clark Kent aspect of it, but the Kal-El aspect of it. Like Kent was just there for certain points, and then that was it. Like, the way that Morrison wrote that, it felt more Kal-El than anything else, more Kryptonian than Earthbound.
And, you know, I guess I said, this is one of the things I think they always do wrong. It's, you know, his origin is that he's the sole survivor of a dead planet.
Right.
But for decades, since the 40s, more and more Kryptonian stuff keeps ending up on Earth. You know how small Earth is?
Yeah.
You know how big the galaxy is? How's it all find its way here? It's ridiculous. It works a lot better if he is the superhero, and he's the greatest man in existence, but he's not a man. He's inhuman, and he's still alone. That's a great angle and great storytelling. Bringing his cousin, his pieces of his planet, his pet dog,
his horse,
his cat. Yeah. It's a
clown.
It's all those things. It's retarded.
Yeah, the rainbow Christmas. I mean, it's just...
And that brings it all back to this. Next year in January, hopefully Snyder can craft a story of Superman that everybody can come to agreement on, that this is how it needs to be. You know, because as far as I'm concerned, the best story that I've read from Superman is All-Star Superman, and that's even outside of continuity.
It's pretty funny that you say that's your favorite Superman story. Because if you ask, like, just if you took a general poll of comic readers of their favorite Superman story, they'd say All Star Superman, Kingdom Come, Red Sun, Birthright, and they're all out of continuity story.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
that's Red Sun.
Yeah, that's where the writer was able to do Superman the way they wanted to.
Because continuity sucks.
Does. Wade's Superman in Kingdom Come is fantastic. I mean, the artwork with Alex Ross, that's for another podcast. But, I mean...
that's a distraction.
Yeah, right? There you go.
Yeah. But,
okay, so we're all of the agreement that Snyder and Lee together has the potential to make a really awesome Superman story.
Yeah, it's awesome. Okay. Is it likely? Track record says no, but...
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, I agree with Jason, too. Well, unfortunately, because they should be easy. It's not, don't seem to be able to do it.
Hopefully they can break the mold, and I hope Snyder doesn't do what Bendis did and get stretched too thin. That's the only thing that I hope, because Snyder's such a good writer, and I don't want him to take on, like, 100 projects and then...
You have more chance of Jeff Johns getting stretched too thin than Scott Snyder.
There we go.
Yeah.
Then my fears are gone. All right. We're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we've got the pull list, the two comics that we want you to check out this week, and it's going to be Avengers vs. X-Men number 12, the last issue in the series, and Kelly chose Hit Girl number 1. What do we think about them? We'll tell you in just a minute.
All right, I'm just going to take a quick look at what's on my pull list. What's this music? What's going on?
Coming this fall on NBC.
What?
A new reality series.
What the hell?
Geek Intervention.
What are you doing in my house?
He was hooked. Addicted. To a website.
I'm not addicted to StashMyComics.com.
He couldn't stop cataloging his comic books.
I couldn't stop.
He couldn't stop writing member reviews.
I can stop. I have to go to work.
Locked in a spiral of self-destruction.
It's not...
Inching closer to death with each passing second.
Oh my God. Why are you playing that music?
Wednesdays on NBC.
Well, I'm not watching because Wednesday night is comic book night.
Oh, really?
Yes, really, yes.
Well, is the new Walking Dead out this week?
Yeah, I'm actually going to the comic book shop now. It's, do you want to ride or something?
Well, if you're going that way, I guess.
All right, let's go. I'm going now.
Geek Intervention, Wednesdays on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the pull list section of this podcast, episode number 27. Tom, you chose Avengers vs. X-Men number 12.
I did choose that. Should I give a breakdown? This is an event that Marvel has where the Avengers are fighting the X-Men. We're all on board?
Is that all we need?
The Phoenix and Cyclops is a douche, and the X-Men became the Phoenix, and Cyclops killed Professor X, and yeah, there we go. Avengers and versus X-Men number 12. I I'm reading, this is one of the two weekly books I'm reading, this is Earth 2, I'm finished reading this now, and I dug the whole series, I put it, it executed well, I'm probably going to pick up a hardcover when it comes out. I was a little bit anticlimactic with the ending of it myself, because it was a sort of pseudo-science ending where, wait, Scarlet Witch's power is her the Phoenix, really? Since when? But,
since this
is this issue, essentially, yeah. So it was kind of a lazy ending, which, you know, you almost have to end these big... They make some of these cosmic entities so powerful that the ending has to be lazy. There's one in there in particular where it's like the Scarlet Witch's powers are chaos, and then the Phoenix is nothing but order. It's, what? What is the Phoenix order personified? It's always, like, chaos and out of control. It was silly. It was forced and scripted and pseudoscience and whatever. That's how they have it.
The one thing that I liked about this was that, like, when Scott Summers was the Dark Phoenix, you could tell that the way that he looked, his costume was all vibrant and chaotic and really aggressive. But later on in the issue, when Hope takes over the Phoenix entity, her costume is totally different than that. Like, she called herself the White Phoenix, the one that was going to bring order, I think, out of chaos and all that stuff. But where
there's been a White Phoenix before, right?
I don't.
Yes, I think so. I don't know if it's ever been in continuity White Phoenix, but I think at certain point, because technically the Phoenix exists in what they call the White Room.
Yes, but maybe that's like that.
But I think at some point you see Jean Grey in the White Phoenix costume, but it's like out of continuity, or it's like a future story or something.
Is that like the Cream song in the White Room with black curtains at the station, right? No?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
You wrote it, too.
Cream wrote that issue of X-Men.
Yeah, there you go. Eric Clapton was the artist. Sure. Fantastic. Okay, so here's my thoughts on this. The artwork was great. I thoroughly enjoyed Kubert's artwork. One other cool thing that I liked about this was the way that they had cut the panels. It wasn't a standard block, square, rectangle panels. They did these side angle things that made it look really cool, and when Nova was coming in and he nailed Cyclops, it was all the side angle stuff, and that visually it looked really, really good, and it took a direction that I don't normally see in comic books.
Can I jump in here, Tim? I actually, as on panel, very important, I read this on my phone, actually. I got it from the Marvel, through the Marvel app. So the one thing you really lose on the app is the issue is the panel and the panel layout, because it's all you don't get to see the whole page at once ever.
Oh, see, that made such a difference for me, because
I could tell just from how the panel shapes were structured, not individually panel to panel, that it was a big deal, and it probably visually helped a lot. But you do lose that, and that's one of the big downsides to digital comics in their current form.
That's such a shame, because like when AVX started, I was not interested in this at all. And I even read the first Versus issue, which I probably shouldn't have done. I should have gone and got AVX number 1 and read that. But reading number 12, that makes me want to pick up the trade when it comes out. But like
Versus is not really it's just battles.
Yeah. Yeah, it's extra angle.
You don't get much plot from them.
I like the idea of Versus, but execution is not very good.
So Kelly,
I like number 6. It was funny.
Right on, Kelly. What are your thoughts on this?
I really enjoyed it. I do agree that it kind of resolved a bit too quickly, but the art was really nice, and I thought it was pretty well paced and a really interesting story.
What did you think about artwork?
She said art was nice.
Oh, right on.
Would you listen to the podcast?
I do.
Don't listen to me when I talk. That's fine.
Whatever.
Ask for my opinion.
Like, what do you think, Kelly? Blah, blah, blah. What's
going on? All I hear is that peanut stuff until it's my turn.
Only listen when I cry about Teen Wolf. I see.
I'm sorry, Kelly. I wasn't paying attention to a word.
That's her name. It's Othmar.
So, okay, did you get the sense of the, with the panels, the way that they looked, did that make it better for you like it did for me, or was it just scanning through?
I mean, I think they were fine. I didn't think, like, I mean, I've seen some bad panels, but I thought they did a good job with them.
Well,
can you really get a sense, can you really get a sense of the panels when you were reading the file you downloaded on Pirate's Bay?
Yes, you do. It's really awesome.
Fantastic.
Jason, here's AVX number 12, please.
Overall, I really liked the series. I really did. But I thought it was, for the most part, really well executed. There's stuff that I kind of have this issue. I hope really, really hard that they go ahead and turn Cyclops into, like, a big X-Men. I think that'd be fantastic. And if you still make him sympathetic, make him the new leader of the Brotherhood of Mutants. That would be great.
I like the X-Men.
There are parts in this series where it's like Magneto turns to him and is like, whoa, dude, be cool.
I like the fact that Cyclops could be a bad guy. At the end of the series, he's got that, he's stuck in this ruby quartz cell with Captain America sitting there. Captain America's drinking out of an American flag coffee cup, which I thought was cool. But he's talking to Cyclops about what's going on and stuff like that, and that Emma Frost and Magneto and Colossus, I think, are still at large. They're all still at large. But
if you didn't make that group in Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, essentially, that would be.
Well, because Magneto and Emma Frost had already worked together in the Hellfire Club. So.
That's true. And Colossus and Magic were both kind of jerks in this series, so you established it.
There you go. But I like that. And when Scott Summers was like, well, you know, more mutants, that's a good thing. And then Captain America was like, don't you dare try to trivialize this or turn it around. You know, you did this. You caused this. You have so much blood on your hands. And Scott, it felt to me, was kind of nonchalant about
it. Yeah. And if you notice, he says at one point, Jason, go ahead.
Well, that's because he's more like Magneto, where you just saw the meme. So... he doesn't, you know, yeah, I mean, Xavier's dead, but, you know, there's new mutants now. There's tons of them. So.
Yeah.
And that's his goal. That was his goal all along. I mean, that's why he did what he did. And there's one telling line he says, where it says, you know, Professor X was everything that was good in me, and Professor X is dead. So what does that say about sort of his own goodness? I think you could take that character and make him more interesting than he's been in years.
Well, we'll see what happens. The one cool thing that I liked that he did as Dark Phoenix was he hit the Hulk in Sydney, Australia, and it sent him all the way to Sacramento, California. I thought that was cool.
That was great.
So let's get final thoughts on this. Kelly, let's go with you. AVX number 12, 1 through 10, what would you give it?
I'll give it a solid 8. It's a really good story. Really good art. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I'm sorry, I missed all of that. Can you say it again?
Yeah, I give it...
no,
I,
just...
he's been a jerk.
Well, no.
Yeah, I was half listening when you asked me to say it again. So.
Jason, final thoughts on AVX 1 through 10. What would you give this?
I'll give it 8 as well. The main thing, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but 4 or 5 years ago, Marvel said that they had like a 7-year plan. Like they had the year to tie in and eventually going to go somewhere. So
was that with like the start of Civil War? Civil War started all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, House of M, I guess, but yeah. I mean, it since then every year they've done one huge event that's managed to, you know, tie in with what's already going on. So I'm kind of excited just to see where it's going to go now.
Fair enough. Tom, final thoughts? AVX, what would you give it?
Yeah, just real quick, just what Jason said. They have a plan and one huge event, except it seems like fear itself didn't really count. And I hope that's true. I would give this issue a 7.
Ooh.
I would give the overall series of 9. And I give this one a 7 primarily because I really think the conflict, the direct conflict portion of it, as I said, was kind of sloppily, half-handedly pulled together.
Answer me this. Was Phoenix able to be in multiple spots at once?
I think I don't think that there's a definitive answer in the pages of the book for that, but I think that's certainly possible. It's a near godlike entity.
That's the feeling that I got.
Me too. No, I don't disagree with that. And I don't think that's necessarily an improbable thing to say. If Phoenix is a powerful, but if Phoenix is that powerful, then which is little hex magic, really? All right. but it was a stretch enough when she did no more mutants that actually worked. You know,
that was a comic book, Tom. Jeez, it doesn't have to be realistic.
I don't need to be realistic. I just need to be realistic. I just need to not be lazy in terms of how they end it. That's all.
I agree with that. I haven't read any of the issues previous to this, but going off of what you're saying, you know, we learn at the end of this issue that Scarlet Witch's hex magic is the only thing that affects the Phoenix out of everything else that they've done.
Well, not the only thing. Iron Fist's fist can hurt it too.
Oh, yes.
Iron Fist too.
Right.
Because let's make that character matter for 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, Hope had it going. Like them two in conjunction, it was all right. But anyways, it was action packed. It made me interested in the rest of the series. I came in at the end, and I want to know about the beginning.
I thought it was really entertaining overall.
Yeah,
I really did. So
yeah,
I think we're going back and
this gives a clear reason now, at least to me, as to why Uncanny Avengers is actually happening. Instead of it
just yes, it does.
Thrown together. That makes more sense to me, and it makes me curious about checking that out. So that may be the first Marvel Now title I take a look at. But overall grade for this issue, I would give it an 8. But
all right, 4 8, awesome.
There you go. Moving on, Kelly. So it,
yeah, but you said it was a 9 overall, so I just averaged.
I'm not gonna.
Kelly, you chose Hit Girl number 1. Why don't you break this down for us? Tell us what it's all about.
Okay, so Hit Girl number 1, like the whole like run of Hit Girl comes between Kick-Ass and Kick-Ass 2, and it just like. Goes through what Hit Girl's been up to, like, after the end of Kick-Ass.
Right on. So what are your thoughts about the issue? Tell me what you thought about it.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoy Kick-Ass, I enjoy Kick-Ass too. But, like, I picked this up because I love the characters, I love the series. So I like that the art's always good and it's always funny. And I think it's a great read.
I loved the movie I saw first before I read the comic books, but I enjoyed the comics too, and I think we've even talked about this on a separate podcast where I think that the two are kind of separate things. Like the comic was its own thing and the movie was definitely its own thing too. I hope that some aspects of this series make it into Kick-Ass 2. That would be so awesome to see. But the way that this started out with I think the character's name was the Silver Beetle. I mean, you had those mom guys just beating the holy hell out of him, trying to get information on where Hit Girl or Kick-Ass would be. And this kid didn't know nothing. And it really set the tone for the book. Like when that mob guy, he's got the gun leveled and the guy's laying on the ground and he's begging for his life. And then the mob guy doesn't say anything, and then all of a sudden you see the gun go off, and the guy's like, Tony, you almost got this on my shoes, you filthy animal. And it was that kind of set the tone for the whole thing, and I loved it. And then the rest of the series with Romita Jr.'s artwork, that's just fantastic work to me, and Millar's writing is really, really good too, and makes me very interested for the rest of the series. Tom, what are your thoughts on Hit Girl number 1?
The other guy was like, keep the change, you filthy animal. And Kevin's like, Mom! And she wakes up on the planet. It's great. love Home Alone. I wonder if we've all figured out yet that Hit Girl is the most interesting character in Kick-Ass, and we really don't need books about Kick-Ass anymore.
No, no.
Just books about Hit Girl will be fine.
I'm good with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. More. I think Juju Junior does much better work on the Kick-Ass stuff than he did, say, on AVX. His AVX work was not very good, unfortunately. Felt rushed, but I love his work on the Hit Girl stuff, on the Kick-Ass stuff. And I agree, Tim, that the Kick-Ass movie and the Kick-Ass book do feel like very different things to me. I think I prefer the movie a little bit, to be honest with you.
I agree with you on that. Not because I saw the movie first, but the movie just had a better flow.
I thought it did, too. I really did, too. It's put together better. The plot was put together better. But I think this was a lot of fun. And it's because the character, the girl, is so much fun. To that Jeff position, you still get a kick out of the idea of a sort of cute little girl with a mouth like a sailor who just slices thumbs apart. You know, the Jeff position, even though we've been used to it now for three series, it still works. It's still entertaining.
And it really brings out a new spot for her too. Like, we got a glimpse of it at the end of both the series and the movie, where she's going into middle school or high school or whatever it is. And in the middle of the comic, when she's sitting there next to her dad's grave and she's talking, you know, I've done this to people, I've done this to people, I've even drowned a person, you know, and then she sits there and she's like, but why can't I handle these girls that have been picking on her since the day she started school?
She didn't say girls.
Yeah. Well, she didn't say that. But.
No, she's not
a female dog.
The person.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. With that,
you don't want to. Whatever.
Jason, what did you think about Hit Girl number one?
Usually I prefer art over writing. I like the writing more than the art in this. And you know, I'm a big Jimmy Jimmy fan, but I don't know, just something looked weird. Like, head looked wonky. Like, the hair didn't sit right on the face. I don't know. Proportions, like, her head size to her body size was just kind of weird.
Isn't that Romita Staple, though? Like, his artwork is always...
Yeah, but sometimes it's not as, like, forward, I guess.
Right.
Like, you don't really notice as much. I that was the first thing I noticed as soon as I saw it. The girl was like, man, her head looks weird. But it was still a good issue. I liked the... Overall, the art was still really well done. I mean, you know, Romita's a great artist.
The head to do the body reminded me kind of like almost the Ultimate Spider-Man, like, where you have an adolescent character and their head's a little bit bigger than their body, where it's small. Okay, that's sort of the phase, you know, physiologically they're at, and that kind of brings a little bit true. They're a little gamely and they're out of proportion, and she's, even though she is who she is, she's still going through that. So I kind of looked at it as that. Maybe it's just drawn badly. I don't know.
How old is he supposed to be? Is she like 13, 14 years old?
I think so, yeah, at this point.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe it was like he drew the head big and then put the hair on her, and her hair made her head look even bigger. So,
yeah. Well, he draws
and then
big hair.
She's like 2 foot tall, and I was like, wow, she's really weirdly proportioned head to body.
Yeah, and he's drawn, like, his hair is like a helmet.
Yeah.
When he ran through his hair, yeah.
Now, I did like the look of Red Mist in this, and him coming in at the end of the issue, you know, basically holding his mom hostage while he takes what's left of his belongings so he can go out. He's already formed his super group. He has Hood 1 and Hood 2, the guys that are carrying his stuff out, and he's getting ready to commit his first super crime. And then he's going to go after his uncle who runs the five families in the city. Is that right? Yes. Okay.
I believe so, yeah.
All right.
Who weren't listening to you, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm used to that.
Yeah.
What?
I didn't know who you were asking.
I like the fact that this has lots of backstory on Hit Girl, because you don't get this type of backstory, at least from the movie, Because this goes a little more into her relationship with her dad, and even with her mom a little bit, which I think is cool. But with this, I love Kick-Ass, but with Hit Girl's miniseries, it just makes an awesome universe even cooler. And it makes me very excited to check out the rest of this series. So with that being said, final thoughts, Kelly, on Hit Girl number 1, 1 through 10, what do you give it?
I give it a 9. I think it's a really good series. I pretty much love the whole Kick-Ass universe, so I'll definitely keep picking it up.
Right on. Absolutely. Jason, 1 through 10, Hit Girl number 1, what do you give it?
Solid 7. It was enjoyable. It's just I couldn't get past some of the art.
Fair enough. Tom, 1 through 10, number 1?
7.5. Wow. 7.5 or 8. Whatever, somewhere around there. I hate the 1 through 10 scale. It's too broad. Do 1 through 5 from now on. That's what you should do.
1 through 5?
Let's do 1 through 50 scale. Other than you did.
1 through 50? I'll give it a 47.
Let's
give it a 42. Everything's got
42. I will give this book a 10. A straight up 10, because it was a great series. It's a great start to this series. It's got me very excited for issue number 2. I'm ready for it.
See, this is why we have to give low grades to balance out entire
Right? Because I give high grades to everything.
You just so enthusiastic about all things.
I am. I'm enthusiastic about everything, except for what I'm not enthusiastic about. And what I'm not enthusiastic about, I'm very vocal about not liking it. Until then, just about everything pleases me.
I wonder if you'll be enthusiastic about Teen Wolf.
I am not enthusiastic about Teen Wolf.
Maybe you should watch it. I bet your daughter would love it.
Probably, but we've got to get through Buffy first.
Hurry up.
Wait, let me clarify this. You're enthusiastic about things that you're enthusiastic about. You're not enthusiastic about things that you're not enthusiastic about.
Right.
You just said that.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious.
Don't question it.
My logic at work.
It's like saying
it's either completely enthusiastic or not at all.
I'm easily pleased. Like, okay. I like Shadowhawk. I don't dislike Shadowhawk, but I'm not enthusiastic about it. But I won't give it a bad rating. I'll give it like a 7 or an 8 or something like that. But I hate...
That's really high.
Not for me, because like...
It's really high for something you don't care that much about.
A 6 and a 7 is about an average for me. If I start rating it at a 5 or lower, then I don't like it. And an 8 means I'm starting to get excited. But like... with Youngblood or the original Harbinger run, I hate those, and I'm vocal about that.
So you give that an 8.5?
No, I give those a 1, 2, or 3. So
I can't believe we're still talking about this.
Right?
Okay, let's just move on. This is ridiculous.
We're going to take a break for a second so they can yell at me some more about my logic. But when we come back, we're going to have some trivia.
Logic?
Yeah, logic.
That's what you call it.
Like what Spock does. Right?
Okay.
Okay, we'll be back in just a second.
StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the trivia section of our podcast. But before we go any further, we need to get some rules set out for you guys. Now, with trivia, we do this every week. When you answer the trivia question, first off, you have to be a registered member of Stash My Comics. If you're not a registered member of Stash My Comics, it takes just a couple of seconds to go to the upper right-hand corner of the main page of the screen and register for this awesome and cool website. It takes a second or two to do it, then you can go ahead and answer this question and win 1,000 free points and a free digital download for you to read and enjoy. When you enter your answer, you also have to put your username on the forums underneath your answer so we can notify you via private message. Anyone that is an administrator of any form of Stash My Comics or that works directly with a podcast is not eligible to play. The first correct answer wins. Once we have a correct answer, it will be noted on the comments section of the podcast, and the winner will be notified via private message. Also, If no winner is found before the airing of the next week's podcast, then the prize is forfeit. Everybody is sad, and we move on to the next week's episode. Also with that, we have the Two Guns Initiative. If you have won on this podcast, then the next podcast you are ineligible for. But the following podcast, you can go ahead and guess away. Make sense? No? Okay. Here's the trivia question. This has to do with Magic the Gathering.
Huh. Oh, Lord.
It's part of geek culture, right?
Go ahead. He's right. Go.
Okay. What is the name of the man that created Magic the Gathering? It's an easy enough question if you've played the game.
Is it the same person that
created Magic the Gathering? It's an easy enough question if you're a big fat nerd.
No, you don't have to. Yeah, a little bit, but...
I don't know anything, so I don't know.
It's an easy question if you know the answer.
There you... Makes sense, right?
If you know it, you know it. If you don't, you don't.
If you're enthusiastic about it, then you know it.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break for a second. When we come back, we're going to get to our weekly distraction, our artist series this week. It's all about all-time favorite artists. Who did we choose? We'll talk about that in just a second.
I'm Scott Shea, and I'm this week's Angry Nerd. Capcom, this name alone, should fill you at first with a sense of nostalgia as you remember games as Mega Man, Street Fighter, Resident Evil, and many others. And usually when you see Capcom, you can see the quality and see that they have sales and a good amount of fans. Then, recently, something changed, and they've gone from a company that was just quality to a company that is going for money and releases and sequels. Take note, I don't have anything against re-releases and sequels. Some of the greatest games can be counted in either or both of those categories. I love Resident Evil 2, and most of the single-digit Mega Man games. What I despise, though, is taking a game not even a year old and releasing it for only a slightly cheaper price with a few tweaks. Case in point, look at Capcom's recent update to the Street Fighter series, Street Fighter 4. It was great. Loved it, and it revitalized the franchise. Then, not even a year later, they released the exact same game and added just the word Super to the title, added more characters, and charged almost the exact same price for the same game. Another issue I have is on-disc DLC, or downloadable content. I realize some assets need to be on the disc for things to work right, but when entire fully playable DLC items are just waiting on the disc, and you have to pay to unlock these things, it just seems like Capcom is becoming just a money-grubbing company. Going back to Capcom again and their fighting game franchises, they recently released a game called Street Fighter Cross Tekken. It met with some sneers as people found out that there were entire groups of characters on the disc that could be played, except for the fact that you had to download a small multiple meg file just to use them. Back in the day, that was just called an unlockable character. Nowadays, it seems we have to pay to use extra things in games. Capcom has changed for the worse over the past years in terms of its fan loyalty. Does this make them a bad developer? No. And even if it did make them bad, there's been worse. One key to having a successful business is being able to make your customers happy. And Capcom will likely take a hit from once loyal fans that stop buying their games. Still, it's support the game, not the developer, right? I guess that means I'll be buying all my games from Capcom used now. We know developers hate that. I'm Scott Shea, and I'm this week's Angry Nerd.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are at Weekly Distraction. Forget the fact that when this episode airs, we'll be in to the third week of Arrow's new episodes. We'll be on episode 3. Forget the fact that Tom has been in the bathroom since the end of the last podcast all the way to this podcast. And forget the fact that Howard went out in the middle of recording. We are at the Weekly Distraction. This is what you will be talking about for the rest of the week. We're going to start something new. This is our artist series. We're going to touch base with this from time to time over the course of several podcasts. But this week, we're going to do artists. not who we think is the all-time best, but we've each chosen three, and these are our favorites. So, Tom, who did you choose?
I gotta go to me first? All right. You know, I am a sports fan reader who paid a lot more attention to the writers than I do the artists, but I'm gonna go obvious, I think, with my first choice and make it easy on everybody. I'm gonna go Jim Lee first.
Jim Lee?
Yes, I am. I've yet to read a book of his that hasn't been gorgeous, that hasn't kind of maybe sit back and just sort of look at the pages without even reading any of the artwork. It's almost unfair, I think, how good he is and how better he has gotten as the years have gone on. So I'm going to start with him. I mean, look at I was just at New York Comic Con, and the cover of the program was Jim Lee's Justice League, and it's just, my goodness, it's good. Can anyone make this team look better? And it's almost when he leaves the book, someone else takes over the book. It's such a letdown. It really is.
I think
to have a new artist, like, it's like, oh, it's just not the same. It isn't the same anymore.
I think that Lee is one of the greatest artists of the modern era of comic books.
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely, definitely that conversation, no matter what.
When you talk about artists that should be in the top five of all time, Lee should at least be considered for that.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same mind as you. Anyone else want to talk about? No, I'll go on to my next one. My next one I talked about before, and he's one of my personal favorites, and he's criticized a lot, but I love him. Is Mark Bagley one of my favorite artists? Look, my favorite character is Spider-Man, so he's the quintessential Spider-Man artist. All the Spider-Man is my favorite book of all time. Bagley is, you know, the guy who did most of that along with Bendis. I just think he's got a great handle on Spidey, on Peter Parker, on the supporting cast, huge supporting cast. And I think he takes a lot of, just a lot of crap unnecessarily, unfairly. Look, I agree there's a certain workmanlike effort to his work. It's a little bit unspectacular, it's a little bit ordinary, I guess, maybe for lack of a better term. But he's a great visual storyteller, panel, which I think is a dying art form and something that you don't really get in your comics artist. And he is one of the guys who, when you need a book to be on time or you need a book to be early, he's the guy you can call.
Absolutely.
His stuff is always on time, if not early.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so Mark Bagley is number two on my list.
And what's your number three?
Larry Struman.
Larry Struman. What has he done?
Larry Struman did X-Factor back when it changed over to the Haddock Strum Guy, Polaris, Multiple Man, Wolfsbane team.
Oh, right on.
And people hate his work. I love that book. I loved his work on it. It's such a unique personality, a unique identity. He came back in recent years to do some work on it, and it wasn't the same. It wasn't as strong. It looked more rushed. But for that book, for the tone of that book that Peter David, for me it was one of the best runs on an X book ever. And I don't think the artwork would have worked on like Uncanny X-Men. I think it had to be on X Factor, which is a much quirkier book than the straight up X-Men titles.
That's funny that you say that nobody liked his artwork, because that is the visual thing that I have for X Factor. Anytime I think about X Factor is starting with 71 with the new team. That's when I really got into it, and I really enjoyed his artwork. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I loved it.
So, Kelly, who did you choose for your top three?
Okay, my first one, I chose George Perez.
Right on. Good choice.
Yeah, like, cause I met him when I was like 10 years old, and like me and my dad saw like a bunch of like Wonder Woman's in the dollar bin, and he like signed them all for me, even though he had like maybe a 15 comic limit or something like that.
Wow.
He signed up like 40 of them. He was just really happy that there was like a little girl there. So
when I saw him in Chicago, he was one of the nicest people I had ever met, and took the time to say hi to every member of my family.
Yeah. He's so nice, and like his artwork is just so detailed, and I just enjoy like looking at the artwork before I even start reading the story.
Right on. His artwork to me, like my favorite thing that he's done is the Infinity Gauntlet series, and it always feels really tight. Like he keeps his lines really tight in and close, and with the movements or the facial expressions of the characters, it's always very prominent on what they do. But who was your number two?
I chose Jin Chung Chiang. I don't know how to say it, but yeah. I'm not good with pronouncing.
And why did you choose him?
Well, Young Avengers, Young Avengers, and that's like one of like my favorite series of all time, and I think it's really, really beautiful work that he did on it.
Okay, fair enough. And your number three?
I chose Joe Yzma or Yzma, and he does the artwork on Morning Glories.
Oh, so good. That's such good artwork.
Very good work.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it because it's just, I think it's really expressive.
It is. It is, like, with the way that the characters, like, the ones that are supposed to be overly animated are overly animated, but the ones that are a little more subdued, the thinner type guys, look the way that they're supposed to be, and it's good stuff. I really enjoy that. That was one of the big selling points for me on reading Morning Glories, was his artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With that, Jason, who did you choose?
All right, I'm going to start at number three and count it up. Number three, Rob Liefeld, King.
Wait a minute.
I do love pouches.
Okay.
And no feet.
Why, out of all the hateful things you say about that man, did you choose him on your list?
Did you not hear me say kidding?
Oh, okay.
JK, bud, JK.
We're just so aghast.
I heard it.
Really?
I was laughing.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, well, it's no surprise Tim wasn't listening.
That's right, he doesn't listen when we talk.
Okay, my number three, Mark Bagley, for everything Tom said. I enjoy McFarlane Spider-Man, but Bagley is the Spider-Man artist for me. I love Ultimate Spider-Man. I don't know anybody that wouldn't love it. I'm not going to go any further. Tom pretty much said everything. Number two, Michael Turner.
Okay.
He's a lot like generally where it was very overly, I don't want to say overly drawn because it's not overly drawn, but overly detailed, very detailed features on people. All of his characters look very human in the face. And
yeah.
Lee's
artwork seemed to me like it was very square for the men that he drew, but Turner's artwork didn't feel that way to me. He seems to be a lot smoother, more rounded.
Yeah, I guess if you wanna put it in terms like that. Yeah, I mean, I've got a box of signed Michael Turner books, so, and I don't know if I'm ever gonna get rid of them.
I love Turner's artwork, and I love the covers that he did for Identity Crisis.
Oh, he did some great covers. I mean, that's what he basically got into there before he died, was covers. He just do variant covers for Marvel and DC, and I mean they're all excellent.
And then some heavily sought after stuff, because his work is that good.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's sought after because most of the variants have some stupid ratio.
But I mean,
but anyway,
yeah, go on.
My number one favorite is Daryl Banks.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys are aware of this. I'm a very big Green Lantern fan.
I did not know. I heard rumors.
So he created or co-created my favorite Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner, in the 90s, and that's the Green Lantern I grew up reading, and he still is my favorite character. So I have a lot of that, and not only that, but Daryl Banks' art is just incredibly well done. And I don't know, I think he's underrated just because he did so long on Green Lantern. And really, that's like the only major thing he's done for the big two. And it was just, it's very well done work. It's very visually appealing. It flows.
Well, it definitely brought a more modern sense to Green Lantern 2 with the way that Kyle's costume looks. I mean, you have that rigid faceplate that he puts on.
It's the crab mask. Don't hate on the crab mask.
Oh no, not at all. Not at all. I think it looks good. And what does he have? Those gauntlets that he wears too, or the big bracers, yeah, or whatever they are.
Well, I mean, I'm not even going to go into the costume, the way he drew the new costume. It was just like Tom was saying about visual storytelling.
Yes,
that was a thing with his art. Was you could tell what was happening just by Banks' art. And then I heard that he's going to be at the con here next April, and I about peed my pants when I heard that.
Is he one of the few Green Lantern artists that you haven't met or gotten autographs from?
Well, he's the only one I haven't met. Well, I mean, he's the I mean, I haven't met any of them aside from Steve Scott, I guess.
I'm sure he'll be very impressed when you tweet him and say, "Hey, I can't wait to see you at the con. I'll be the guy with the peed pants."
Well, actually, I was like, man, I wanted to sign this book, and then I got to, like, 50 books. I was like, this might be a little too much.
Are you going to be that guy with the cart of comic books and just put them in front of him and be like, there you go, sir, we got about...
Well, I might, yeah, I'm not going to be that guy, because I think that's really, really rude. I might have him sign, like, five, and then go to the back of his line and wait again.
There you go.
Or if there's nobody behind me, I'll just pull them all out and be like, here, sign them.
Sometimes they have limits, you know.
Can you personalize?
Actually, I could make it really creepy and just like not say a word to him, just pull him out and set him on his desk and not even make an eye contact.
Pull him out, like wear a big jacket and pull him one at a time. So like, what is this gonna end?
Wear sunglasses.
Be all shady.
I could have somebody with me that they're just holding the books.
I'll go with you. Why not?
Yeah. Tim, you can just stand there, arms outstretched, holding the book, and you can be acting, like, real scared. And
getting a full tuxedo and a silver plate.
Sure. Wow.
Okay, but Tim, who are your three?
This is who I chose. I'm going to start with my number three, and that is Greg Capullo. His work on Spawn was really good. I think that the transition from McFarlane doing Spawn and then Capullo taking over was a great transition. And though Capullo tried to be like McFarlane for a little while, he eventually came into his own and made the book look visually appealing like McFarlane had when he had done it. And also, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about reading X-Force. When Liefeld left X-Force and Capullo took over, it made the book so much better because the artwork was actually really good and it went right in pace with the story that they were trying to tell, and it just made it that much of a better experience for me. And now with his work on Batman, that's phenomenal. I think this is Capullo at his best, and he is my number three artist of all time. With that, my number two is Jack Kirby. Kirby, to me, is the king of comic book artists. He set the standard, and the standard pretty much has not been broken since then. I mean, a lot of the concepts and ideas that he had, though some were not as good as others, the character designs that he came up with pretty much have stayed the same over the course of time, and anybody who's anybody that does artwork for comic books will say that Kirby at least had some sort of influence on what they're doing now. I mean, the Kirby particles are still in comic books. Anytime you see somebody powering up or doing their Dragon Ball Z moment, those little black dots that are surrounding him and all that stuff, those are Kirby particles.
Kirby lines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah. So Kirby is my number two. My number one is Mark Bagley.
Wow, a lot of Bagley love on the panel.
I love Bagley's art, and Bagley redefined the visual look of Spider-Man that I don't think has been challenged since. His work on Amazing, he was on Amazing for a long time. And then he went and did Ultimate Spider-Man, and he was on that for a long time. I did not care for his work at DC when he did Trinity with Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman. I didn't care for that at all. I didn't think that that was good stuff. But the stuff that he did on New Warriors was good, even though the book was crap. The artwork was great. It was Bagley artwork, and he did the best that he could do. And just, I mean, Spider-Man, there's nothing more that can be said that hasn't already been said by you and Jason. I mean, he set the standard for Spider-Man, and it hasn't been broken. That nobody has been able to top him.
I agree with all of that.
So there you go.
Good points to him.
Those are mine.
I wasn't listening. What did you say?
I missed all of that. You cut out.
Right.
Jim Valentino? What? Is that what you're
saying? I'm actually kind of surprised it took us to the fourth person to say Jack Kirby.
Well, see,
I'll be honest.
When I came up with the list, I mean, that was the first person that I put on there.
Good call.
I was thinking, I was like, okay, artists. First thing that popped into my head was Fantastic Four and Silver Surfer.
Meyer Stroman was listening to the podcast saying, yeah, dude, why'd you pick me instead of Jack Kirby?
Hey, I was talking to a buddy of mine. I asked him his three, and his first choice was Sam Keith.
Really?
I was like, well.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I mean, it just takes a while to get used to his art.
It's a very personal choice, that's for sure.
Yeah, Keith is a love it or hate it kind of.
Oh yeah,
kind of artwork.
So Stroman.
I hate it on everything except for the Max.
I remember him doing a Nightcrawler and Wolverine, which I was like, wow, this is horrible.
all of his Batman and Wolverine, they look very animalistic.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's his style.
Yeah. But anyway.
So were there any honorable mentions?
No. I mean, other guys I love, like guys whose work I love in particular books, like Brian Hitch on The Ultimates, but I don't really like him on anything else. yeah, and he's not bad. I think his style is so realistic. It only works for the realism of a book like The Ultimates. But in terms of those are sort of my favorites. Emotional reaction almost to artists. Those are the three I put on the list.
I'm surprised that none of us as Spider-Man fans chose McFarlane.
I don't like McFarlane, actually. I'm not a fan.
I explained my reasoning. I prefer Bagley to McFarlane.
Right.
Yeah. I appreciate what McFarlane did for the character, because he did do a lot of stuff for the character, but personally, it's not my personal taste.
Fair enough. What about Ditko?
I think Spider-Man kind of wasn't drawn well until John Romita Sr.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not, I think Ditko was it's very serviceable work. I'm saying, yeah, blasphemy, I know, but I'm saying not my cup of tea. John Romita Sr. came on, and the book really found its identity, I think.
Right on, I agree with that. And then he set the standard, and then it just kind of went from there until Bagley came and
reinvented that.
Well, all right. With that, we'll take it to the end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the end of the podcast. Don't forget to hit up our merchandise store, Zazzle.com/StashMyComics. That's Zazzle.com/StashMyComics. You can get T-shirts, hats, bumper stickers, you name it. It's there. Go to it. You know you have to have this stuff. I don't know why I have to tell you every week. But you need to go there and get it. Also, don't forget to take a look at some of the articles we have on StashMyComics.com. The Dollar Box from Paul O'Connor, who does Long Box Graveyard. That's a great article to take a look at. Also, Tommy Lutz does Comics for Noobs. If you're new to the comic scene and you don't know where to go, check out what Tommy has to say. He will steer you in the right direction. Don't forget Scott's articles for game reviews, old and new. We've got some Arkham Asylum and Arkham City coming up in the future. Also, Borderlands 2 and Darksiders 2 may be hitting the scene soon. We'll take a look at all that later. Also, don't forget Back Issue Bin to the Future. We've got crossover classics coming in the future also. More geek cinema. Tom, what do you have lined up in geek cinema for us?
Let's see. Well, we know I'm doing our the Why I Left Superman, the motion picture, off of my top 10 list. I'm going to probably reprint my top 10 list to give Jason fits again. What else? I have something else I want to put on there. It's just as completely a statement. But that's the one that's coming up next, the Superman the motion picture. Why it doesn't belong on my list, because I don't like it.
Well, that's going to be a good one to read. I'm going to look forward to that. Don't forget, cool. Also, to leave your comments on any of these articles. We want to hear your feedback. We love to hear your feedback. And Tom is very vocal about it on Geek Cinema, and we will all respond to you. Don't forget, leave that feedback, guys. Anything else that we want to add to this?
I like it best when you disagree with me.
Yeah, somebody has to. It seems like you and Jason are blowing steam out of your nose. Lied. I'll throw in the random disagreement.
That's all right, except when it comes to something you like, and then we're pretty vocal. We're pretty much in agreement that it sucks.
But that's pretty fair. But I mean, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, man. Come on.
It's not.
let's be real, seriously. It's his top 10 superhero movie list. It's Meteor Man, no, Mystery Man.
No, I don't like that. Mystery Man would be on that list.
Yeah, I know. We know it would be. Yeah.
And so would Ninja.
Yeah, well, see, that's why Tom does the list and you don't.
He'd be like Ninja Turtles 3.
No, not Ninja Turtles 3. Who said Secret of the Ooze in the comments section?
Somebody I don't know. One of our readers who we love you. Keep reading the column. Yeah. That's oh my god.
Yeah, not Secret of the. I mean,
come on, dude. Yeah.
Vanilla Ice is enough to shoot that off of the list.
And they don't use the weapon. They don't use their they don't. They don't use their weapons in Secret of the Ooze because parents were concerned about that. That too, which is, so many things.
Right on. Yeah. Well, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, keep an eye out for us next week. We will have more great stuff on episode 28. Also, don't forget to take a listen to the Apes for podcast. That's good stuff, too. It's all comic books. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of here.
StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.